Turn to somebody near to you and say, I'm so glad they're a me. Now say to the same person, I'm so glad that I'm not you. If you'd been sat in that floodlit room in Dave the Speed Freak's flat, you'd have seen the scars for yourself. Dave the Speed Freak was one of the original old school Mancunian clubbers. You should have seen him. He was thin, he had false teeth in, and he dressed like Starsky in Starsky and Hutch. Raise your hand if you remember Starsky and Hutch. It was a Saturday night, and I was in my local pub in town. It was just before closing time, and Dave came over. Barry, do you fancy going back to mine to do some speed? Back then, I was injecting heroin and speed loads of times every day. So this was a no-brainer. I'd never been to Dave's before, but I knew that he lived in Beswick, which is just outside town. So we got in my car and we drive to Beswick. When we got there, he said, right, stop here. I live just over there. So I stopped and we pulled up in the middle of Fort Beswick. Fort Beswick was a massive concrete streets in the sky housing estate that they built in the 60s. But now it was all derelict. There was no lights on anywhere. All the windows were boarded over. There was graffiti all over the place. I thought, he can't live on there. He said, come with me. We got out of the car and I followed him into one of the dark staircases into this big block of flats. It was pitch black. Could hardly see him, thinking, where's he taking me? We walked up all these stairs right to the top floor. Then we walked down this walkway past all these front doors to near the end. He stops, gets the key out, puts it in one of the doors. This is where he lived. Come in, Barry. We walk in, he turns the light on. This was the only light on the estate. Dave, why are you the only one living here? He said, they're knocking it all down. And I've told him, I'm not going anywhere. He takes me into this little room. Wait here, Baz, I won't be a minute. He goes out and comes back in, and he got changed. Now he's wearing a cratty suit, a white skull cap on the back of his head, and orange slippers. He got dressed up for the occasion. He said, come on, let's go in here. He took me into this other room, his living room. You should have seen it. All I had in it was a small settee, and it had a big executive office chair that was slap bang in the middle of the room with a massive spotlight hanging over it. I sit on the settee, he sits on the office chair. He then reaches down to the side of him, finds the switch and flicks it. And that bright spotlight came on and it lit up the room and the rest of Fort Beswick. You should have seen his face. He looked like a flooded Jack Nicholson in The Shining. Wearing a skull cap. Here's Johnny. He took his speed and I took mine. And I'll never forget looking at my arms and the backs of my hands and seeing all the scars that were there through injecting loads. Some of these are still there. I see these now though as my battle scars. I don't know what happened to Dave or how long he ended up staying on Fort Beswick for. But I do know that going back to that floodlit room in Dave the Speed Freak's flat reminds me of my battle scars. The online dictionary said a battle scar is a wound suffered from battle. Do you know, it's not just me who's got battle scars, is it? We've all got them of one kind or another. Because we've all been in some sort of battle that's left us with a scar. Some are visible and some aren't. Raise your hand if you know what I mean. So what can we learn from our battle scars? Here are four lessons for you to walk away with. Number one, battle scars prove that you can stay standing. If you'd have met Jeff, you'd have liked him. Jeff was mixed race. He had really short hair and a neat handlebar moustache. He was a bit of a villain and he worked as a doorman at a nightclub in Mosside called Dorino. Jeff was 11 years older than me. He'd been on the scene for years. So I knew who he was. Most people did. He was well respected. I'd crossed paths with him quite a few times when I was out and about. So he kind of knew of me. But we didn't really get to know each other until we did a jail sentence together. That's when we became really good friends. We first started getting friendly when we were on remand in strange ways. In those days, you got one shower a week. Once, I went down to get my shower and Jeff was there. He had his towel wrapped around his waist. We started chatting, then I clocked his stomach. There was a massive chunk of it missing. Jeff had broad shoulders and a bit of a pigeon chest and a tight stomach. So when he walked with his chest out and his belly in. I didn't know that this was one of the reasons why. You should have seen it. It was full of twisted scars. Jeff, how did you get them? He said, I got them when I was working on the door at the Reno. I got into a battle one night outside with a load of white kids, and one of them smashed a pint pot and rammed it into my stomach and twisted it. And then he said, I couldn't keep myself up. But then this guy stepped in to help me out. So the lads legged it. He said I was in a right mess. But as bad as it was, I didn't bother going to hospital because I didn't want to get the police involved. So I just stitched it and tied it up the best I could. And it left me like this, with all these scars. These were just battle scars. Battle scars that proved he'd stayed standing. See, battle scars prove that you can stay standing. What about you? Maybe you're in some kind of battle right now and you feel as if you can't keep yourself up. Listen, God can step in to help you out, same as that guy did with Jeff. You see, Jesus is God with skin on. He died on the cross and he rose again, and then he went to the place where his followers were. And a guy in the Bible called John tells us that he said to them, look at the scars on my hands. Look at the scars on my side. He showed them his scars. His battle scars. And they didn't need to have a bright spotlight on to see them. They looked and they saw them firsthand. Imagine that. And these battle scars proved to them that he'd stayed standing. Listen, if he can stay standing after that battle on the cross, he can help you stay standing in your battles. Whatever it is you're battling with, he can get you out the other side. So you've got battle scars that prove you've stayed standing. But you need to let God step in to help you out. That choice is yours. Going back to that floodlit room in Dave this Beef Freak's flat reminds me of my battle scars. Battle scars prove that you can stay standing. Number two, battle scars can stop you going back to the fight. If you'd have been in that prison with me when I was speaking that day, you'd have heard the lad ask the question at the end. Barry, what stops you going back to your old life? I said a few things really, but one of them is my battle scars. Because when I think about how I got these, they stop me going back. See, battle scars can stop you going back to the fight. When I think about how I got my battle scars, just those left inside, I think about that time in our flat in Hume when we lived on the bull rings. I'd been speeding off my head for months. I hadn't slept. You should have seen me. 3 stone wet through. And that's when we'd be on Borgfield tracksuit on. I'd built massive carnival-sized speakers. I put big bass units in. Piezo tweeters, somebody had nicknamed me from Maplin. I had one in one corner and one in the other, and I'd sit in the middle for perfect stereo, making house music, using the bits of recording gear that I'd set up non-stop. If you'd have lived in Hume, you'd have heard the bass line coming from my flat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The guy who lived below me, Dennis, asked me to turn it down once. I ignored him. I saw him months later at the shops. He didn't look well. He hadn't slept either. You should have seen him. He was drawn, white as a ghost and dead shaking. Do you know, recently I found some of the cassette tapes that I recorded. So I got a tape to MP3 converter. One of them is called Up Tempo. A techno tape. You can't really call it a mixtape because it's just one track. Man, you should hear it. Bobbing it along. Do you know how tracks have a structure? Intro, verse, chorus, this doesn't have any structure. Just one continuous drum machine beat with a few pattern changes synced to a synthesizer, 45 minutes long. The old side of a cassette tape, non-stop. Listening to this is like listening to the soundtrack of my previous life. Back then, though, I thought it sounded really good. I obviously wasn't well. You can see why I ended up in a mental health hospital. And then I think about the time when I thought the Iranian guy who lived above me was watching me through the crack where the wall meets the ceiling. He's spying on me. So I got some wood, loads of it, and nailed it all the way around like a skirting board. Bang, 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 can't see me now. And then there was a time when I got remanded in custody. I was telling all the officers, God's called me to be a famous DJ. You can imagine what they were thinking. This guy's a nutter. They put me on the hospital wing. And then there was a time in prison on the exercise yard. Instead of walking round every day, I just sit on the floor with my legs crossed, my head shaved bald, and my fingers touching, thinking I was Buddha. Nobody had come near me. Now it was me that looked like Jack Nicholson in The Shining, with a bald head. Here's Barry, stay away from him. And these are just some of the times that come to mind. There were others. And it was these crazy drug-induced times that left me with battle scars inside. Is it any wonder? I'm just so grateful that I'm alive. And that my mind is functioning normally. Well, my wife might tell you different if she was here. And yes, I've got battle scars in there, of course, but it's thinking about how I got these that stopped me going back. See, battle scars can stop you going back to the fight. What about your battle scars? Just flick the switch to put that bright spotlight on so that you can see yours. They could be like mine, but it's more likely that they're not, because you've been on a different journey and you've got yours from something on that. Listen, in whatever way you were left with yours, those that's been left inside of you somewhere, thinking about how you got them can stop you going back. See, battle scars can stop you going back to the fight. Maybe you keep going back. And your battle scars are like open wounds because you keep licking them. Listen, let God step in to help you out. Isaiah in the Bible says, forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. Listen, you don't have to keep going back, because with God on your case, you can get to that place where your battle scars stop you going back to the fight. This happened with me, and it can happen with you. But you need to let God step in to help you out. That's up to you. Going back to that floodlit room in Davis Speed Freaks flat reminds me of my battle scars. Battle scars prove that you can stay standing. Battle scars can stop you going back to the fight in number three. Battle scars can motivate you to move forward. Jackie's did. She told me. If you'd been there, you'd have heard her. Jackie was a thin, wiry-haired drug addict who was working as a sex worker on the streets. She read my book when she was in prison. Oh, and it just so happens that I've got some of my books with me tonight. By chance. Just so you're aware, we started a project when my book came out in 2007 to give a copy of Once an Addict to every prisoner in the country. Right now, there's 84,000 prisoners behind bars in the UK. We have sent 47,000 copies of Once an Addict out so far. We've still got some more to send. For every one copy of Once an Addict you buy, we then send two into prisons for free. So you're buying three and giving two to prisoners. There's some other bits and bobs on the table over there. All the proceeds that come in from that table go into our work that we do in jails, because we don't get any funding for that. And that's just a small amount, but it just contributes to the work that we do in jails. Just so that you're aware. Jackie got attacked one night when she was out working. She said, I got picked up by this Polish guy in a car, and he took me to an house that was about 5 minutes away. We get there, walks in, but when we walks into the living room, there were two other guys there. So I sat on the settee and lit a cig. But then they all started talking in Polish, and it made me feel dead uneasy. I thought, sat this, I'm off. So I got up, went to the front door to get out, and it was locked. He locked me in. The next minute, the three guys came rushing out, grabbed hold of me, and dragged me back into the room. You can guess what happened next. It was horrible. And then she said, what they did to me that night, Barry, left me with battle scars. I had so much pain inside after what they'd done to me. But that was it for me, though. Enough was enough. Because that's when I knew that I had to move on. So I went into rehab, and that's when God stepped in. See? It's like a bright light came on, and she saw her battle scars, and her battle scars motivated her to move forward. See, battle scars can motivate you to move forward. What about you and yours? Is this the time for you to say, enough is enough, so that you can move on from them? Way back in Bible days, there was a guy called Paul. He had lots of battle scars. He'd been there. He'd worn the t-shirt. He said, forget what's behind and reach forward. Listen, you need to decide to move on. Your battle scars can motivate you to move forward. Jackie's did. But are you ready to say, enough is enough, and to let God step in to help you out? That's up to you. Going back to that floodlit room in Davis Beefreach flat reminds me of my battle scars. Battle scars prove you can stay standing. Battle scars can stop you going back to the fight. Battle scars can motivate you to move forward. And number four, battle scars can prompt you to take a better route. One time, I had an MG Mini Metro. Raise your hand if you remember Mini Metros. Well, mine wasn't a Mini Metro. Mine was an MG Mini Metro. You should have seen it. It was wine green on the outside and bright red on the inside. It had polished alloy wide wheels. It had a small racing style steering wheel. It had a sports big bore exhaust. I'd ripped through our estate, blasting out tunes, turning heads. You should have seen me. I looked like a cross between Smeagol and Vin Diesel in Fast and Furious. Early hours one morning, six of us piled into my MG Mini Metro, and we set off down the road to find a rave. We were tripping off our heads of magic mushrooms, bobbing up and down in time with the music, and throwing shapes. We were following a searchlight that we'd seen in the sky. Do you remember seeing the searchlights in the sky from those original raves? I got on the motorway. I was on it for a bit, and I thought, there's the rave, it's over there. So I came off the next turning, gets onto this road, drives down it, but it wasn't there. I got onto this other road, drives down that one, still wasn't there. I got onto this other road, drives all the way up that one, but still nothing there. 3 hours later, I'm still driving down these little roads. I looked up to the sky for the searchlight, and it was dead faint. We were miles away. I said, guys, we've taken the wrong route. That journey in my MG Mini Metro mirrors my life. I'd taken the wrong route. I was on it for 15 years. And then one day, my battle scars, those outside, prompted me to take a better route. If you'd been there, you'd have seen how it happened. Somebody invited me to church. So I turned up. Wasn't what I was expecting. People were dressed really casual. Bit like you lot. Bit scruffy, really. People were coming over to me. Are you all right? I'm so glad that you're here. I'm like, why are you glad that I'm here? You don't even know me. Where's your handbag? Wasn't what I was expecting. Get out the tambourines. And the flags. It was like the opening of the Olympics. I'm thinking these guys are all basket cases. I came in here to get away from people who are on drugs. This is better than any LSD trip I've ever had. Whoo. That day I was prayed for. And I had a light bulb moment. That's when God stepped in. I went home. Walked through the front door. Then walked into the bedroom. I took my jacket off. And I rolled my sleeves up. And I looked at all the battle scars that were there. On my arms and the backs of my hands. And I felt dirty. And I raised my arms up into the air. And I said, God, you're alive. God, I don't want to live this way anymore. I want to live my life a different way, your way. See, on that day, the switch was flicked. A bright spotlight came on. And my battle scars prompted me to take a better route. See, battle scars can prompt you to take a better route. What about your journey? Have you taken a wrong route? Whatever kind of wrong route that is for you. It could be that you've not taken a wrong route, but you want to be on a better route than the one you're on now. Listen. 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 2,000 years ago, 2,000 miles away, God became a man. His name is Jesus. He came to this earth, and he was tempted just like you, but he resisted temptation. And at the age of 33, he allowed himself to be nailed to a cross. And then they stabbed him in the side with a spear. This left him with battle scars. He died on that cross to pay the price for your faults, for your flaws and for your failures. He died on that cross so that you can take a better route. There's a proverb in the Bible that says, when you submit to God, he makes your path straight. Listen, you need to give God consent to come in so that he can step in to help you out. 2014, I was travelling down to London to speak at an event. And I wasn't in an MG Mini Metro. Just over halfway, I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to stop off and get a coffee. So I came off at the next service station. I parked my car in the car park and I walked towards the service area and I tapped my pocket and my wallet wasn't in my back pocket. Where's my wallet? Must be in the car. So I walked back to the car and then I put my hand in my pocket for my keys. Where's my keys? I get to the car door. I tried the car door and it was locked. I looked through the window. My wallet was on the passenger seat and my keys were in the ignition. I don't know how I managed it, but I'd locked myself out of my car. And to make things worse, my phone was in its holder. Oh no, what am I going to do? I've locked myself out of my car. My first thought was, where's the nearest brick? And then I thought, oh, I don't need to do that anymore. I'm posh now. I'm a member of the RAC. So I dug deep into my pocket and I found a 50p piece. I went into the service area and I phoned the RAC. I said, mate, I've locked my keys in my car. He says, where are you? I told him where I was and where my car was parked. He says, stay where you are. Keep your car in sight. Somebody will be there within the hour. So I stayed where I was and I kept my car in sight. And within the hour, the RAC van came. and the man parked the van next to my car. I came out to him. I said, "Mate, I've locked my keys in my car. Can you help me?" He said, "Yeah." He opened the side of his van and he pulled out a bag. It was about a meter long. He put it on the roof of my car and unzipped it. I stepped back and watched. He pulled out a little wedge and a little hammer. He put the wedge between the door and the door frame, and then he tapped it with the little hammer and the door opened a little bit. And then he pulled out another wedge, a bit bigger, put that in, tapped that, and the door opened a bit more. And then he pulls out this device with a pump on it. He slips the device between the door and the door frame, and he starts to pump it. And the door opened even more. And then he pulls out a long piece of wire with a hook on the end. He sticks it through the gap that he'd created, and he reached in for my keys that were in the ignition. He missed the first time. He missed the second. He got it the third. And then he pulled the keys through like that, got them to the other side of the door and pulled the bunch through. And I'm watching thinking, if only I'd have known that when I was a criminal. I'd have made a fortune. Better than the centre punches. Anybody remember the centre punches? 1, 2, 3, shattering the windows. And then I thought, that's just like us and God, that. See, in a way, we are all like a car. God is outside and he wants to come in. But he will never try and force his way in. He'll never think about using a brick to break in. And he will never try and break in using tools. No. Instead, he waits for you to give him consent to come in. This is what he says. I stand at the door and knock. If anybody hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in. See, he doesn't force his way in. He stands and he knocks and he knocks and he knocks. And he waits for you to open the driver's side door. He waits for you to give him consent to come in. And when you give him consent to come in, he steps in to help you out. Listen, battle scars can prompt you to take a better route. But are you ready to let God step in to help you out? That choice is yours. What are you going to do? I'm going to finish by taking us back to that night when I was in Dave the Speed Freak's flat. He'd invited me round to do some speed. When we got there, he was the only one living on the estate. He takes me into a little room. He goes out and comes back in and he'd got changed. Now he's wearing a cratty suit, a white skull cap and orange slippers. We get the speed ready. We go into his living room. I sit on the small city and he sits on the big executive office chair. He reaches down to the side of him, finds a switch and flicks it. And that bright spotlight came on. And it lit up the room. And I'll never forget looking at my arms and the backs of my hands and seeing all the scars that were there. Some are still there. These are now my battle scars. But it's not just me who's got battle scars, is it? We've all got them. Please stand up. No going outside for a smoke just yet. A few more minutes. Listen up, listen up, listen up. Right now, God is stood outside your life and he wants to come in. He needs you to give him consent. And when you give him consent to come in, he'll step right in and he'll help you out. What are you going to do? I'm going to finish by praying a prayer. There are two groups of people going to pray this prayer with me. The first group, listen up. Those people, you've never prayed a prayer before. You've never given God consent to come.